It's Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
And I'm very happy to have Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewitz back on the air with us this morning. Lieutenant Governor, Happy New Year. How are you?
Thank you. Doing well and excited to be going to Humboldt today to watch more people get vaccinated.
Yeah. So, Lieutenant Governor, I can't help but notice you are in our listening area. You're in our neck of the woods last couple of days. It's been very exciting to have you down this way. So, first of all, what's happening in Trumbull?
So, in Trumbull, the senior center will be administering doses of the vaccine to people who are in the 1A category. So, those that are in our healthcare workforce, residents of long-term care facilities, and, you know, any first responders that deal with COVID patients. So, this is part of our ongoing effort. The good news is there are about 300,000 people in that 1A category in our state. And the governor announced yesterday that 75,180 people in that 1A category have already received their first dose of the vaccine. So we're making some good progress. And by this Friday, January 8th, all of our nursing home residents will have received the first round of the vaccine. So we are doing very well amongst all the states. We're in the top 8 states in the country in terms of getting the vaccines out there to people who need it.
Lieutenant Governor, just curious, though, it sounds like not just here in Connecticut, but across the country, we have more vaccines available, but it seems like we're not vaccinating people, I want to say, fast enough. And that's not to come off as being like we're not doing things quick enough or that I'm not grateful for how quickly we're moving. But there's a disconnect there. And I'm just curious, like, why is that happening? We have the supply, but it just seems like we're not distributing it as much as we could be.
Well, we are delivering the vaccine as we get it, because a part of the issue is, right, the federal government has not been supplying the vaccines to the extent that we thought. But as we get the vaccines, they are being distributed to people across the state. Now, what I think people do have to understand is that there's a logistical challenge, right, associated with how you get the vaccine to the appropriate categories of people who are covered under 1A.
Sure.
You know, our state is a little different than some other states. For instance, Florida, they just have first come, first serve. So anybody over 65 who wants to get the vaccine can stand in line. Now, a vaccine distribution committee made the decision that we wanted to make sure that our healthcare heroes who treat COVID patients or are very likely to come into contact with them,
yes,
get the vaccine first, and that nursing home residents, unfortunately the population that has been most hard hit by COVID, get it first. Now, one thing I can say is that if you look at New York, and compare our state to New York State, for example, we've provided more doses to residents per 100,000 than New York. I think we had over 1,011 doses for every 100,000 people, and New York had just over 750 doses to every 100,000 people. So, you know, we're doing our best, and it is, again, our thought that by this Friday we'll be done with the first dose for nursing home residents. So that's 22,000 people who have the first round of protection.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a huge milestone for Connecticut. I just want to make sure I'm clarifying for people who are maybe going to their doctors and they're saying, hey, I'd like to get the vaccine, and they're in that 65-plus category. First of all, we are not at a point where we're giving it to 65-plus yet, so that's the first thing. But second thing is, if a doctor can't tell you when you can go to get your vaccine, my understanding is it's not like the vaccines are sitting on a shelf somewhere and we're just holding off. Like, we're not purposely not vaccinating people. It's just whatever supply Connecticut has at this point.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
And so what we are doing is we are saying, as we get new doses of the Pfizer vaccine. And by the way, we got a second round, and so some healthcare workers are now getting dose number two starting today, right? Because you have to get them the two doses over a 3-week period. And as we get the vaccines, we are making sure that our priority groups, nursing home residents, which will be done with their first round by the end of this week, and healthcare workers get those vaccines. Other states have just decided that they're not going to prioritize. So for those listeners who are out there, because believe me, I keep getting our office, I think every elected official is getting these calls. Well, I've had cancer. I'm a senior. I have an autoimmune disease. When can I get it? Mm-hmm. So if you're 65 or over, you live or you live in a congregate setting, if you have some type of condition, or you're an essential worker, you're going to be in the next round, the 1B. And we don't yet have a timetable for that, but likely it will be sometime over February, March, and April. So you can stay in touch with your doctor's office, but at this moment, it's not, as you point out, it's not like there are doses ready for everyone. Literally, Moderna and Pfizer are going around the clock producing these vaccines and distributing them on a pro rata basis to states based on their population all over the country. So this is going to be a process. And if you're under 65 and over 18, it's likely that you will get your vaccination probably sometime late spring or summer. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're trying to do, is put a plan into place. And I, this has not been completely decided, but, you know, the pharmacies like CVS and Walgreens, who are now doing a lot of distribution of vaccines in nursing homes, will be part of this. Hospital systems will be doing vaccine clinics, and also, you know, just as you see today, a senior center having a vaccine clinic, there will be vaccine clinics like we are used to seeing, flu clinics where anybody can go. So those are going to be later on in the process. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, so sorry we have run out of time, but I'm looking forward to talking to you again really soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. And if anybody wants to get tested, they can go to the Milford Mall between 10 and 2.
Yes, at the Connecticut Post Mall, absolutely. Because you were there yesterday, right? It was running smoothly?
Yes, absolutely. Very smoothly. They were testing between 250 and 300 people a day. You don't need an appointment, and it's free.
Those are all really great things. So there you go. Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks for having me.
From North Stamford down to the Cove, Alyssa in the Morning on WICC 600.
What is said about you will carry over into your personal life, into your career, into your relationships, into your community, and it will impact your life.
It's really hard to put a stop to this for a lot of reasons. You're taking on the internet. You're taking on the worst corners of the internet, and suddenly you're getting death threats.
What are we about to hear?
These were voicemails that were left by the woman who was sentenced to federal prison.
So you're listening to a snippet, actually, of 60 Minutes that actually aired over the weekend. And it was talking about how online harassment can then follow you into the real world. And the man you heard right at the top of this story, and you heard him talking a little bit about the voicemails he got, he kind of dives into a little bit more that he goes through. He shares his personal records that have been flashed all over the internet, including his social security. He includes different addresses that he used to live at, pictures of his old apartments that date back 20 years or so. You are hearing from none other than Lenny Posner. Now, Lenny is one of the... Sorry, I get really emotional about Sandy Hook. He's one of the fathers, one of the parents who lost a child during Sandy Hook. His son, Noah, actually was 6 years old. He was the youngest of the 26 children who passed away that day, or I should say the 20 children who passed away that day at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. So Lenny went through, I'm going to put it bluntly, Lenny went through hell and still is, you know, so many years later after burying a child. First and foremost, before I even dive into the dangers of the online world, conspiracy theorists who truly want to sit here and believe that Sandy Hook didn't happen, it's lunacy. It's actually offensive. It's messed up on every level. If I could honestly express myself, I'd get thrown off of the air because the trucker in me would come out. But let me just say that people who felt the need, especially from other states who know nothing about Sandy Hook Elementary School, know nothing about Newtown, Connecticut, maybe don't even know anything about being a parent or even know anything about burying a loved one, should just shut their mouths. I'm just going to put that out there. Conspiracy theories about Sandy Hook are just disgusting. Point blank. Okay. Now that I got that off my chest. So Lenny was one of the many parents that was completely harassed after the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. This was a man who was getting death threats from people because they thought he was playing into the complete hoax, the complete setup, the complete act that Sandy Hook did not happen. So he was kind of touching on the woman who did end up doing jail time. She went to jail for 5 months after calling the whole thing a hoax, accusing Lenny of lying to the country about the death of his son, Noah, and basically harassing him, sending him voicemails, messages, you name it. She was doing it. So a judge totally agreed, said, you're completely out of line. This is not OK. And she was thrown in jail for a few months. And even then, some people would argue that that's not enough. But when you're harassing people, there you go. What I think is interesting about it, though, is the fact that most people who harass you on social media, on the Internet, where they find information about you, not only does it carry into your personal life, but it also, most of those people never actually get a slap on the wrist at all. Maybe Facebook will kick them off, or maybe they'll block them from a page, but those guys never actually get arrested or pay a fine, or here's a jarring idea, apologize. Like, they just fly under the radar and they keep doing it over and over and over, and they go to different pages and they go to different people and they find different things to be miserable about. And they just tear people down. I don't get this. I don't understand this concept. I really don't. And if you could sit there and defend it, then I question that. I've got to be honest. I really do. I question it. I definitely come from the background of, if you have something to say, then say it to my face. If you have an issue with me, let's work it out like civil human beings. Let's not sit here and make fun of each other's hair color or weight or height or anything like that. Like, it is crazy to me. No matter how public you are, or no matter how private you are, every human being has value. And this idea of, let's get behind a computer screen and talk smack about people, or let's say mean things, or let's, you know, get on them for their physical appearance, or for something as tragic as the fact that this man had to face a reality that I hope to God most parents never do. Sandy Hook was the biggest tragedy, one of the biggest tragedies of U.S. history, and certainly the biggest tragedy in Connecticut. This man had to bury a child, say goodbye to a six-year-old beautiful baby boy, and then deal with the ridiculousness, the disgusting nature of people just bored out of their minds wanting to hate on him and hate on the situation and come up with theories because, I don't know, they're bored. Or because they think being a devil's advocate is fun. I don't really know. And look, I'm all for looking at all sides of a story. But you tell that to all the teachers and the classmates and the families and the first responders. You tell that to all of them. That this was one hell of an act that they put together. So then to take it to 60 Minutes, I want to harp on this because this is how serious it's become. Lenny Posner got onto 60 Minutes a couple of days ago, and he is unrecognizable. In fact, I was watching it, and I didn't even realize it was the same guy. This man had almost a full face change. Almost like when Robin Williams puts on the fake face for Mrs. Doubtfire. That's what this guy did. Full beard, full facial hair, different color hair on top of his head. His whole face looked different. Like, you could tell they clearly did extensive makeup for this guy to go on 60 Minutes. And while I admire the fact that he went on and he talked about the extensiveness of online harassment and how it carries into your real world, I was so sad to see a man who's already gone through so much pain and brokenness with the loss of his son during one of the worst tragedies we have known in this generation, to then get on national television and have to hide his face to make a point. I was really sad to see that. I'm glad that the Connecticut Post highlighted it because I did see it on 60 Minutes. And I thought to myself, you know, this guy obviously is trying to send a message, but who am I to expose him even more? The fact that it was like pretty much front page news on the Connecticut Post. And if you go onto their website, you can find it there, too. You know, watch the clip. It's astonishing. I mean, Lenny looks like a totally different person. But his message is so insanely clear, and it's how dangerous the internet is. And if you think that posting a photo is not going to land somewhere in Saudi Arabia, you're wrong. I just think the internet is getting scarier and scarier. While it is so essential and it has done so much good, it has also brought so much bad onto people. And I felt like this story really captured the essence of it, and they did include in the online version a link to go watch the clip of Lenny on 60 Minutes. So I highly encourage you to do that. It's incredibly insightful, and it's also just a very sad reality that we live in America and across the globe and with the internet. And more than anything, I just would take the advice of thinking about what you post. What you post. Every day I do a Facebook question of the day on this show. Every single day. WICC 600. You can get in on it. And almost every single day, there's some wise comment or some backhanded comment or something about whatever. And it's just like, what? Why? Like, do you feel better? I mean, I'm hoping if you get your anger out on me, maybe you'll be nicer to your spouse or to your kids or to whoever you work with. Like, that's the only way I justify people being mean to me on ICC's Facebook page is I'm like, OK, well, maybe they took their anger out on me instead of somebody else. I could take it, but maybe their spouse couldn't, or maybe their children couldn't take it, or maybe their colleagues. But when you have that much anger and you just don't know what to do with it and you're attacking people online, you should probably go get help. You clearly have something you've got to deal with, and attacking people online is not going to solve that.
Family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Hey, Julius. Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, Melissa. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Love having you on every week. So it's interesting that you picked this topic yesterday because I was talking to our listeners, you know, first day back of the new year, and I told them that I understand a lot of people do New Year's resolutions. I am not one of those people. And here's why, Julius, is because I think that as humans, we put these crazy expectations on ourselves. A lot of them are probably within our means, but we do something like, I want to lose, you know, first of all, we say an amount of weight that we want to lose. And if we don't reach it, then we failed. We say we want to do something over the next year instead of kind of increments of like maybe a few weeks or a month or 2 months or whatever. And we never trust ourselves fully. And I just find that resolutions more times than none just kind of like they get us all built up just to tear us down. I don't know your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think you're right in a way. You've got to start when you're ready. Because everybody says January 1st. But the truth is we all have a limited amount of time to live.
Yeah.
And you don't want, if you're in your mid-20s, mid-30s, you don't want your life to go on and say, gee, I should have done this. And all of a sudden you're in your 60s and you look back and say, I wish I had done something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is looking at the time that you're given on this earth to really make an impact for others and really better yourself as a human being. And the question then becomes on the deeper level, what do I really want to contribute, and how do I want to take care of myself, and what do I want to do with my life, and do I really want to change? Do I really want to lose that 5 pounds? Do I really want to? And go from there.
And I think also figuring out, Julius, like why these goals matter to us. So sometimes, you know, we'll say something like we want to lose 30 pounds. But a lot of times, I have to be honest, people will base it off of, oh, well, I saw this person on social media who looked amazing, or I ran into this person and they looked fantastic. But you really don't know under the surface what's going on with them. First of all, those photos can be altered. Second of all, that person could have like an immuno disorder or something that makes them have a hard time gaining weight. Like, I don't know. To me, I just think we a lot of times we'll base our goals off of other people.
Absolutely. Or what society is telling you, which is a key reason why they fail. Some goals that we write are too vague. And some goals we write, you have no realistic plan or no definitive goal in mind in terms of how am I going to do this. There's no accountability set up. They're just too vague in many cases.
Mm-hmm. So what do you suggest we do? Well, how do we even begin to, even if somebody right now in the last couple of days have said, oh, maybe my goals were a little too lofty, or maybe that was a little much. How do I kind of pull back and sort of replan, refocus? What is actually a good goal for me?
Yeah, there was a great in the Journal of Management Review. There was a great article written about how goals should be SMART. S-M-A-R-T, the acronym. SMART meaning S, specific, M, measurable, A, achievable, R, relevant, and T, time bound. And if you unpack all those areas specific, not just saying I want to lose weight, but I want to lose 5 pounds by the end of the month or by within 2 months. Measurable, making sure that, I had one person who actually took pictures of their nails because they wanted to stop biting their nails.
Oh,
so they
that's
took
cool.
pictures
I like that.
With their phone. And in a lot of ways, you can even use your phone as a means of helping you to track your progress in terms of technology. But just making sure that you ask yourself the question, you know, what do I want to do with my life and how do I want to be my best self? I want to be the best person I can be to contribute to society.
Julius Dudix is here, our morning show counselor. Now, Julius, it's inevitable, and I'm not being pessimistic. I'm just being realistic because I know I have fallen in this category before. So we have a goal. We think it's all of those things. It's SMART, as you say, but we get to February or March and we just don't accomplish it. And I think that the mentality for most people is, okay, I failed. I'll either wait till next year, or this wasn't the right journey for me, or I picked the wrong thing. And it's interesting to me because, you know, I was actually watching something, a personal trainer who's a friend of mine from college, she posted something and she said, when you go to work and you don't get that promotion, do you quit work? I thought, wow, what a great way of putting it that way, because it's true. Like if you want to go up in scale or something at your work, but maybe they found somebody who's more qualified or they didn't think the right timing, do you quit your job? Like you don't quit your job, you keep going. So why is it that we've got this disconnect with goals versus maybe something like a job or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a great question. We tend to be so hard on ourselves. And even if a small goal for you or anybody this year would be to be kinder to yourself, be kind to yourself. We beat ourselves up. We carry a club around and we just are so our worst critic is within our own head in terms of the negative dialogue. You always have to press a reset button with yourself or even in any relationship. No relationship is perfect. Press the reset button. Wipe the slate clean. Start over every day. When you fall down, you're going to fall down. Expect it and accept it that you're going to fall down and then keep moving forward. But the other significant thing is to surround yourself with people who are going to help you and accountable friends who really care about you and develop those relationships. And they'll help you to kind of get back on track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I always like the idea of even if you have a goal that maybe aligns with somebody else, Doing that together is always really fun as well. Yeah, that's a
which
really
which is why Weight Watchers is so incredibly successful, because they're actual meetings and people rely on each other to help.
Yeah,
but be kinder to yourself, Melissa. I think our society, we've taught ourselves to have lofty goals, and if we don't achieve them, then we just get the club out, and we are constantly hitting ourselves and hitting ourselves. When hey, God loves us and He wants us to enjoy a quality life and a happy, fulfilled life.
And I think that idea too, Julie, is that we don't deserve to have self-care. We don't deserve take rest or to take vacation time or to invest money in, if you are a woman, like getting your nails done, or feeling guilty, you know, if you're a guy and you do vigorous workouts, getting massages once a month. Like, I think that we don't feel we deserve it as humans.
Sure, absolutely. It even affects families. And I do a lot of work with young families, and I'm always encouraging them to develop your family rituals, you know, be it a Taco Tuesday, Saturday morning, or a Jones Tree Farm kind of a thing, or commit to going for a walk or a bike ride once or twice a week, or have device-free hours or service or volunteer or meals together. But families need to come together, and families need to develop these types of goals at the beginning of the year and try to stick to them and hold each other accountable. But kids can be taught this, and then they can begin to kind of hold mommy and daddy accountable. Well, we didn't have our family meal, or we didn't have, you know, our device-free day or whatever.
True. No, I like that. I like that. Well, Julius, you've given us a lot to think about this morning. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Melissa. You have a good day.